we'll get started. I know that we stand between now and lunch, so we'll make sure that I think we have cookies, so we're all appropriately sugared. I'm Christine Stensland, and this is my third year attending. I came 1 year as a volunteer, and I was overwhelmed with what an amazing event this is and wondered why wasn't this here when I was a single mom. And then I spoke 2 years ago and did a breakout. And really, in those two times, I'm like, you know, I think it'd be awesome to have a single mom support squad. And so these are my girlfriends, but they also come with experience and a lot of great wisdom, and they're just a lot of fun. So I like having my friends with me too. So talked to Angie and her staff, and they said, yeah, come on up. So we're going to do a panel. I did give them the questions that I was going to ask, but we're just going to kind of go with it. If you guys, I mean, there's not many of you, so if you want to ask any questions, just scream or yell or hold up your hand or whatever, but we're just going to have a conversation about all kinds of different things that happen as a mom, as a single mom. So really, in addition to being my friends, this group includes those of us who have walked single parenting, and one of us who isn't a single mom herself but professionally supports countless single parents and just parents in general. So together, I hope that you'll see that we bring a rich mix of personal story, lived experience, professional insight, and maybe a little humor, because, you know, sometimes you just have to laugh at the silliness that happens in life, right? So our goal here today is really just to speak life, truth, and invite all of you to dream big with God. I like to say that we're here to equip, empower, and encourage you on this journey with you. So as we get started, I'm just going to open us in prayer. So Heavenly Father, thank you for bringing each woman into this space today. You see every story, every heart, every burden, and every dream. As we gather, let this room become a place of encouragement, connection, and holy inspiration. Please guide our words, soften our hearts, and let your extravagant love be felt in every moment. Help each mom here to know she is not alone and that you are dreaming big dreams with her and for her. In Jesus' name, amen. So I gave you a little bit about myself. I have two biological sons and two stepdaughters. And I say it that way. We were having this conversation on the way up here because a few of us met through blended family ministry work. And I just call them my stepdaughters because that's what they are. They're not biologically mine. And I want to give women and parents, actually, quite frankly, just the insight to understand it's a different connection. It just is. Different dynamic. It's totally a different dynamic. And just to be able to say stepdaughter versus my sons, just to explain to people, biologically, they're mine. They have my shenanigans, my genetics. I've known them longer than my husband, right? Now, if you go in order of, you know, my who I focus on, it's Christ, my relationship with Christ, and then my husband, and then my boys, and then my girls, and then nobody else would I go in front of a bus for. So they're still very important in my life. I've been married, it'll be 19 years in July 1st here, so we're coming up on, which in blended family years is two times, so 38 years I've been married, because it's just more complex, and you get that. Your kids have two parents. Maybe they're going between two homes. I don't know everybody's situation, but certainly multi-household family structure is just different, and if you're in relationships, it's different. So again, my kids are all out of the house, so empty nest. In blended family world, we say the honeymoon comes at the end, and that is true. My youngest will be 23, and our oldest is 28. So they're all over. A couple of them are married. So I'm going to have my friends and panel introduce themselves. You can say whatever you want.
Oh, well, hi, everybody. My name is Angie Ellsworth. I am the lone unsingle mom on the panel. However, my background is in education, social work, and counseling. And so after spending 25 years in public education supporting families and students and teachers, I left that and started a parent coaching business where we advocate and support parents going through child protection, court-ordered divorce, custody things, and also youth behavioral health issues. So I hope to share a little bit with you about some of those questions you might have and give you some guidance and support. I'm the mom of three young adult children, and they are all in college right now, and That's another whole stage of parenting. And so my husband and I are from Rochester, and I'm just really pleased to be here for the first time. And Angie shared earlier that there's a leadership conference this winter, and I'm already going to be signing up to go. So, yeah, so thanks for having us.
Nice. Hi, I'm Lisa, and I was a single mom for about 3 years. I'm remarried now for 12 after a divorce, but we have about 25 years of marriage credit because we worked hard for that credit, so I'm going to count it. Right. And I have two bio daughters, 22 and 25. And then I have a stepson who's 17 and a stepdaughter who is 14. And my husband and I co-lead our blended family ministry at our church. And I was also this past March just finished a year-long training through our church. It's a training called Called to Peace, and it's to be an advocate in our church for anybody that's experiencing domestic violence or coercive control. And my day job is a leadership development coach and consultant. So it's good to meet you all.
Hello. I am Lori Romberg McGregor. I live in Dallas, not originally from there. I'm originally from San Diego. My husband and I have been married for 13 years. We were both previously married and brought two kids into our marriage. I have twins that are 25. Our daughter lives near her dad up in Washington State and just finished her degree last year, so she's trying to figure out what she wants to be when she grows up. And my son, her twin, he is autistic and has an intellectual disability, so I've walked the parent of a special needs child path for 25 years now. And he lives with us full time. And then I have my stepson Alex is 18 and just finished his freshman year of college, and Abby is 17 and will be a senior in high school and is doing all the activities like crazy. I'm an OB-GYN in Dallas, and this will actually, August will be 20 years I've been in practice, so big milestone coming. My husband and I run the blended family ministry at our church, Watermark Community Church in Dallas, and we are also an affiliate staff with Family Life, specifically on the Family Life blended team. So we help coordinate conferences throughout the U.S. At least twice a year, and touch base with other churches that are trying to grow blended ministries at their churches. That's mostly my husband's job.
Because you're delivering babies and
what's that?
Because you're delivering babies and doing other things. Yeah.
In my copious free time.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's about it.
All right. Perfect. So yeah. So you can see, I recruited from all over. But just solid women. I was saying on the way up here that I think any single one of the women on the stage could run a small country, but you get that because you're single moms, because you have to, right? Like, you are running a small country with, you know, various and sundry participants and their listening skills and all the things. So, all right, so I am going to just start asking some questions, and then you guys can pass and see who wants to answer. All right, what helped you hold on to hope during your hardest season as a mom or a single mom? Hardest season so far, because we all know it's just something that's going to continually happen.
Well, I'll take this one. I was a single mom for 7 years, from when my kids were 5 until I remarried when they were 12. And I was very far from God in my first marriage, and it wasn't until partway through my single mom years that I just had a really good friend who said, Satan is just battling for your soul. And in coming back to Christ, like, that has got me through those years. And I would say, so A, my relationship with Christ, and then B, just the people I've then surrounded myself with, my girlfriends in my community, that is how I hold on to hope. So the single mom years were really tough. During that time, my mom got ill. She was living with me and the kids to help take care of the kids. And then she got sick, so roles reversed. But the community I had around me really, just made all the difference. So about to start on another tough journey soon, but we'll leave that for another question.
I think holding on to hope, just having a really good support system around me. My mother was incredibly supportive with just, you know, me deciding to divorce my former spouse, who was verbally and emotionally abusive and narcissistic. So extremely important to have that. I would say the other thing was absolutely Christ. So I came to Christ through my divorce. Born and raised in the Catholic faith, but just saw it as religion, and a very good friend of mine took me to her church, and that's when I really met Jesus and understood what it was like to have a relationship with him. So certainly a couple of scriptures, you know, Romans 8:28, you know, for we know that, you know, for those who love Christ, it's, you know, it's just, there's better things to come. He will use those things for good. And Isaiah 41:10, just all about erasing fear and you know, God will hold you in his hand. So those were some pretty important things. There's something else I was going to share and I can't remember now, but we'll come back to it, Angie.
Not in my single mom journey, of course, but as a parent and as I work with other single moms who are, you know, going through lots of life challenges, one of the consistent themes that I would say I see most regularly is the shift from feeling like what you do for yourself is selfish. And I see that pretty consistently. And in addition to what these ladies said about having supportive people on your side, I think I also encourage people and looked myself to look at what was not supportive and cut that stuff out. People who second guess you, people who are jealous of you, are, you know, envious of you, or who don't want you to succeed and don't want you, you know, to be supportive, and they're quite adamant about that in your life, and you know that you might be in a toxic situation, or you might be, you know, the enemy might be like facing you down, and you succumb to that, but you don't have the courage to overcome it. And a lot of times when I think about women that I've worked with, or you know, myself and some of my toughest parenting journeys, it's that piece where you shift away from saying, I don't have what I need and all these people are bringing me down. And instead you look past that and you say, I'm getting rid of all of that stuff and I'm going to focus on me. And it does seem selfish in the beginning because for so long we've put so much of our energy on our children. And we haven't put a lot of energy into ourselves. And so that's something that I feel like, if we can get past the point that I'm doing these things for me, which will eventually impact my family, that's not selfish at all.
I remember the other thing. Yeah. 2 years of therapy also helped. That was
that gave you
a
hope.
Big
it's
one.
The 2 years.
A
yeah.
Big one. Yeah.
Yeah, because sometimes you do need to have external help, right? Wherever that comes from, and the filling your own bucket first, right? Like you can't serve out of an empty bucket, and that's hard. I mean, I've seen lots of heads nodding and. Just as a mom, like just that, like I have to do everything and I come last. And then sometimes that catches up to us. And so those are all great reminders. Okay. So I'm just going to ask one more question out of this section. Can you describe a moment when you felt truly seen or supported as a mom? I heard a couple, like my mom came and lived with us, or just even as a mom. Like I know my mom shows up when my house is in disarray. Sometimes I'm not the most organized human. I did not get that genetic from either one of my parents. They're very organized, and she knows when I'm professionally. I have a tech startup, a software startup company, and so it's my husband and myself. And sometimes it's way overwhelming, and I just can't get to things. And my mom just showed up a couple weeks ago, and she's like, "I'm gonna do this," and I was like, "Okay, thank you." So even it as an empty nester, you know, those other people step in to help you. And that's beautiful. Okay, now I'm done crying. Okay, what else? No, it feels seen. Okay, great. Okay. I mean, that's it.
Well, I mean, I guess what I would add is just, I mean, when I came to my family and said, I have to get out of this marriage, and that, of course, that was the last thing I wanted to do, but I felt totally seen and heard because they never questioned or said, why would you want to divorce him? And that's the wrong thing to do. You know, I started to just unravel all of the things that had been happening. And just my family was just like, we are behind you 100%. And that meant the world to me. And even having my brothers come over and help me with dude type stuff that, you know, I just couldn't do.
Yeah,
that was super helpful.
I would say pick three or four things that are regular things that you need help with. And this is one of the things that was crucial for me. And my kids started kindergarten the year I got my divorce. And so all through elementary, I was working full time. I was had my mom, and then she got sick. Like, all these things were going on. And I met other moms with kids in the same grade, and we started gathering together socially once a month. But then and this is really before even the church community side grew, I had a group of mom friends. And if I was like, hey, I need help, like I need someone to pick up my kids from school and hang out with them or just keep them at your house until I can get there after work. Like, just think of three or four things that you might need help with on a regular basis, whether it's pick up and drop off from school, or gosh, I've got, you know, I need help with laundry, or I need someone to mow the lawn, or like just little things like that. It's almost like a situation where you're in a state of grief, like after someone's passed away, and people want to help. They just don't always know how to help. And so if you kind of, same with after having a baby, they want to help. You'd be like, okay, please just come do a load of laundry for me. Like, I don't care how you do it. I don't care how you do the dishes or load the dishwasher. Like, just do something. And so it could just be something as simple as someone to come in to mow the lawn or take your car for an oil change or whatever it is that you need help with.
Just the only thing I would add is, you know, well, I didn't say I was from Wisconsin, Northeast Wisconsin, and our church, you know, sometimes there's so many resources that you don't even know about. So if you can prioritize that list that Lori's talking about, and like our church has an Agape Fund, which, you know, can help you through some bad times if you need rent or you need money for groceries. And then there's, you know, the oil change ministry, and there's even a ministry where, you know, they're helping widows and single moms with repairs and things like that. So I think getting specific about what you need.
The other thing I was going to add too is that when we know that there are many, many generous people in the world, right? And part of the barrier to receiving that help is being vulnerable enough to be able to let your guard down and to say, I mean, I think about it that way when I personally feel like that too, when I'm struggling with something and I try to hang on to it too much and I say, no, I can do this, I cannot. And if you see how much you can give yourself over to God in your times of stress and vulnerability, and you do this to the same with the people who are reaching out, 90% of the time, 95 probably even, when you can let that go of yourself, people want to help you. They want to be generous. They are good and giving people, and that's what God does. That's what he does for us, and when we hang on to that too much, we prevent other people from giving the way God would. So if that encourages you a little bit to let that guard down and accept and ask for that help, then maybe that will springboard into then at some point in your life you will be able to give back as well.
Oh. All right. Yeah, I have one. I'm not good like that. Okay, so we're going to actually do a lightning round. And since there's not very many of us, that we're all going to say just the first thing that comes to mind, just so that you realize that we're also human beings, and we're also moms and all the things. So it's just a lightning round, so that you're going to say, you'll get the question, and then we're just going to go around real quick. So we're going to start, we'll start with Lori, and then I'll even go, and then we're going to go this way. Is that okay? You can just say it out loud, okay? They're nice. Easy questions, okay? So one word to describe motherhood this week.
Satisfying.
You got this. It's quickening.
Relaxing.
Okay.
My bio kids aren't even with me this week. I got one bonus daughter. That's it. And her friend. Right. So it's like easy peasy.
I would say peaceful.
I didn't say rest because I don't have my kids either. They're all empty nesters. Okay. One word to describe motherhood this week. Oh, okay. Okay. Happy. Okay. Challenging. Say it again. Purposeful. Okay. Memorable. Beautiful. Okay. Different. Okay. Grateful. All right. Next one. Favorite guilty pleasure before bedtime? Like eating. Yeah, well, I said after bedtime, but that seems like that's too. Yeah. The question was actually after bedtime, and I'm like, I think that seems a little. Not at the right level of rating. So I know, I was like, somebody didn't vet this very well. I didn't vet my questions very well. Before bedtime. After the kids are in bed, before you go to bed.
I would say just exchanging silly memes with my husband.
Okay.
I play the New York Times games before I go to bed. So there's like
really?
A, yeah.
That would
that
make my brain
and
fire
like,
up.
Solitaire to just like turn my brain off.
That's way too much brain power for me.
Anyway.
Okay.
I'm with you, the New York Times games and Euchre. Okay. I play Euchre on my phone.
Okay, well, I watch things like Ransom Canyon on Netflix, so you can see who's using their brains and who's just fully checking out. Okay, go ahead. What do you do for yourself?
Wordle.
Hey. Oh, yeah. My gosh, okay. Photography, okay. Multiple reels, okay. Yeah, TV shows that aren't cartoons. That seems great. Okay. Okay. TV non-cartoons and sharing reels. Okay. Well, there seems to be a theme. I'm guessing the ages of your children. Yeah. Oh, goes to sleep. That seems great. Oh, binge watch baking shows. Reading. All right. Nobody ate like big bowls of ice cream or anything. Song that gets you through a rough day.
Probably like old school R&B. Anything you can dance to.
Yep.
Pick one,
yeah.
Like it depends on the
it's
mood.
Lightning
like,
round.
I know, and I'm horrible at the lightning round.
So, well, this morning I listened to "Lovely Day" by Bill Withers, and it was
lovely
awesome
day.
Start to the day.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good one.
So usually it's anything by Maverick City Music.
Okay,
I'm just going with Matchbox 20.
All right, perfect. Mine, yeah. There you go. Right now for me, it's "Overcomer." Just. Sing that sometimes at the top of my lungs when I'm having a rough day. Okay. Don't have one. No Wiggles. I don't think Wiggles. Are Wiggles even a thing anymore? I don't know. My kids are old. Right on. Slowly. Okay. Okay. I Will Rise. Okay. Oh, that's a good one. Hard Fought Hallelujah. Yep. That's a good one. Stand Still by Mara. Okay. God only knows. Yep. Yep, I love it. It is well with my soul. Okay. All right, now back to actual questions. Okay, so from your professional experience, or from your experience, what's one insight you wish that all single moms knew about caring for themselves? So you kind of all alluded to this, but one insight you wish all single moms knew about caring for themselves.
It is absolutely okay to say no.
Oh, there you go. Like, no is a complete sentence.
I mean, you just have to, yeah, no is a complete sentence. You can't do everything. And people will ask you to volunteer for things and do this. And like, you have to learn how to say no and be confident in that and peaceful in that. And that was a hard lesson for me because I want to help everybody.
Yeah.
It's what I do.
Right.
Yeah. I'll piggyback on that because in addition to saying no, I read a book at one point when my kids were all in elementary school because they're back to back to back. So they were all like, you know, third, fourth, and fifth grade. So they were all in this chunk. And it just seemed really overwhelming at the time. And one of my church friends recommended that I read a book called My Sacred Yes. And in addition to saying no, it was how do you know what to say yes to? And it was when that request could specifically use your gifts. And so everybody can make a box of brownies. Right? So say no to that crap. If there's something else that you know you have a specific gift to, if somebody needs a photographer at the dance event, then that's your skill set. That's your gift. You can contribute. But other than that, say no to the other stuff. Because the other people who have time and can do that, then they will. And if you can really use your own gifts to support whatever you're in, then that's where your sacred yes should lie.
I like that. I think that's a lesson, continually learn, right? Continually learn, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, Lisa Turkhurst wrote a book called The Best Yes, which is very similar to that. And it's figuring out, you know, what to say no to so that when you do say yes, it is your best yes. And like you said, if you're saying yes to all kinds of things, you may be taking away someone else's opportunity for their best yes and not even realize it.
Yeah.
When my kids were little, we had a 2-2-3 custody arrangement, so 2 days on, 2 days off, then three. And so on my off days, that's when I would make sure I did something for me, right? Yes, I would do the laundry. Yes, I would get the groceries because I wanted to really try to focus on my kids when they came back. But I would do something for me. So just don't – I know you'll get in your head, oh, I really should be doing X, Y, or Z, but you need that time for yourself, whether it's hanging out with friends or – playing the New York Times games or just whatever, going for a walk.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to just dive a little deeper into this. So how can moms advocate for their needs, whether it's the doctor's office, school systems, workplace, or faith community? Any thoughts?
There is a lot of stereotype and bias out there on single moms. And I can't speak for myself, but I can speak for years of working with them and advocating for them in all of those settings, especially moms who are going through challenges with, you know, child protection or divorce or custody or even having children with special needs. And my biggest encouragement, if you are one of those people that are struggling with gaining the respect from the people that you are interacting with, is there's this really fine balance between being vulnerable but also being assertive. And you will never ever have a chance to go back and advocate for yourself or for your children. And if sometimes you have to knock on the door a little bit louder, then you got to knock a little louder. But there's also this fine line between really engaging those people in their support of your family. And once you find those trusted professionals, you got to hang on to them because they will go to bat for you as well. But as if you ever get that intuition that says these people are not on my side and these people are not supporting me, then look around and go find someone else and make your opinion known in a respectful and tactful way, but also in a way that will assert that this is what I'm doing for the best of my family and I need your help. I don't know everything. I'm just trying to do my best and I need you there on my side. And if you're not, then I'm going to go somewhere else. And I think that kind of directness is really what's going to be supportive for you and it's going to empower you and feel more confident and be able to really earn the respect that you deserve and that your children deserve throughout those processes.
The only thing I'd add to that is just trust your gut. I mean, I think I had professionals, and in my case, it was medical professionals telling me, you know, I'd share symptoms and issues, and they'd say, no, you're fine, you're fine. And I was not fine. So listen to your gut. You may have experts and professionals saying something, but you feel like something's still off. So advocate for yourself.
Well, actually, so Lisa had shared her most recent training with me just this morning. We went out on a walk before we headed over here, and I asked her, I was like, is it okay if I ask you the question? Because you kind of said that advocating for yourself and professionals were missing some of the things that were manifesting because of the relationship that you were in, the toxic relationship you were in. So I asked her if it was fair to ask her to sort of think through or what she would share with this 12 months of training that she just went through with all of you as you think about future relationships or as you process past relationships or just her takeaways that might be relevant to you today on the, you're going to have to give me the name of it.
Called to Peace.
Call to Peace. What that training was for her. So I did ask if I could put her on the spot a little bit because I think it's important work that she's doing with your church, but it's important skills and information that we need to have. So.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, our church engaged in this because, you know, there were plenty of hurting marriages and abusive things going on, and they knew they needed to do something different. So the goal is really to respond better, not perfectly. But, I mean, there was a lot I took away from that 12 months of training. But one of the things that I, you know, for any of you that are maybe dating or thinking about dating, I think one of the things to look for is if you run into a guy that is really, you know, the technical term is love bombing, right? So buying you flowers and taking you out to dinner and, oh my gosh, like saying he loves you after like 2 weeks and do you want to move in and it's only been 3 months and oh my gosh, I want to marry you. So that is an abuser's tactic. So they want to pull you in quickly. They want to marry you quickly or even get you to move in quickly because then they've got you under their power and under their control. So be really cautious of that. Certainly there are wonderful men out there that will want to buy you flowers and take you to dinner, but if it's really intense and really fast, be careful of that. The other thing that just as you think about your children and if they're, you know, going between your house and between dad's house, is that unfortunately, you know, in my case, I didn't really notice coercive control going on with my children while I was married, but saw a lot of it after we were divorced, and they would come to my house and share stories. So just do your best to inoculate your children with love and grace and all of the healthy love that you can provide to them for when they do have to go to dad's house. And the last thing is probably when you hear your child being an angel at school and maybe even being an angel at dad's house and they come to your house and they're just a ball of mess, like that, you should take that as a blessing because you are the safe parent. You are the one that they can be totally human with, and that's important. So,
all right, and on that note, before you leave today, we bought you these it's called Blended. So even if you're not in a relationship, it's still navigating life between two homes. And it's actually a workbook for children. And it was done by somebody else that we've met in our Blended Family Ministry out of Texas, actually. But it's for children, and it has some big questions and helps them understand, like share things. And, you know, so it looks like a coloring book-ish. But there's one for each one of you over here. But just maybe help them walk through what is it like to live in two homes and have some conversations that you, as you set up that safe space for them so that they can tell you what's going on and you can help them navigate if there's some coercive control or other things going on, just so you have a little bit better understanding.
Yeah, so. And abuse can take many forms, right? It's not just physical, it's emotional, it's verbal, it's spiritual, using, you know, biblical scripture in the wrong ways, it's financial, it's sexual, like there's so many. If you even just Google the abuse wheel or coercive control wheel, it will show you, and it's just a really good lens to look at new relationships through, for sure. The other thing I would mention, and I did not learn it in the Called to Peace training, but it's something that I'd encourage you to do if you are thinking about dating, getting engaged, getting married. It's a book called 101 Questions to Ask Before You Get Remarried, or he's got different versions. There's a remarried one, an engaged one. Yep. But if you're dating a man that refuses to walk through those questions with you, I mean, that's a sign right there that, bye, say no.
I think those are like $2 on Amazon because I've
they're
super cheap. The 100 questions.
I would say also Ron Deal, who runs Family Life Blended, he's written like a whole series of books on stepfamilies, but he also wrote Dating and the Single Parent, and it really, you know, helps you realize you got to put the brakes on and take things slow and answer a lot of those questions. Because, you know, entering into a marriage, your focus changes and you have to be willing to put your spouse first above your kids. And that can be really hard to do when you've been a single parent for a long time.
Yep. Yep. Oh, I just had them. I mean, I just like these questions. Oh, the book. 101 questions.
It's 101 questions to ask. I would just Google that even on Amazon, or you could search it on Amazon. Mm-hmm. I do not remember the author's name, but he's written multiple books. The one I read was Before You Get Engaged. His newer one is Before You Get Remarried. There's, you know, so it's literally 101 questions that you can sit down and start to go through together. And I mean, some of them are deep, right? It's like, what are three reasons why someone would want to marry me? And what are three reasons why somebody might not want to marry me, right? And I was like, well, I've got an abusive ex-husband. So, like, and he doesn't want to co-parent with me.
Say it again.
Before marriage, that's one version. There's an engaged version. There's a remarriage version. And then Lori's referring to the Dating and the Single Parent book.
It's a little tiny book. That's what I remember.
I'm going to have to get my phone out.
Did you find it on Amazon? Norman, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, literally, I think it was like $2, right? Yeah. So there's it should be like 101 questions before getting engaged, getting married, remarried. Okay, perfect.
Yeah, if you've been married before, divorced, and now you're thinking of getting married again, I'd highly recommend the 101 questions to ask before you get remarried version. Yeah.
Yep. Or even if, I mean, they're all walking in with children, so even if they weren't married, just
right.
you were coupled somewhere. Yeah.
That's
true.
Norman Wright. You're right.
There you go.
It was Norman Wright.
All right. So we're at 11:40, so I'm going to open it up for questions. I have more, but other questions that you have for us, any of us, anything coming to mind? Anything is fair game. Custody cases? Yeah, legal cases.
Like mainly how to navigate it all or how to trust in the process? Because that's hard.
I mean, this may sound simplistic, but in the Call to Peace training, you know, they encourage women to put together a binder, like where you have everything, all of your documentation, you've got your tabs, you know, whether that's interactions you need to track, you know, with your former spouse or your child's father. I mean, even just court documents between you and your attorney, all of that, have it in one binder in one place is a way to stay organized.
One tool that I've started really coaching my clients in using is AI. And I'm not going to lie, it's not foolproof, but like I have several parents who, when they're going through this process, any process at all, when they are significantly stressed and they are in crisis and they realize the risk that is involved in this process and they don't know how to navigate it, they will put all of their mumbling and bumbling thoughts and all of their concerns into AI and they will say, help me draft questions to ask my lawyer. Help me ask questions to ask my child protection worker. Help me organize my thoughts into a document that I can present to the court. Like, you, whatever's in your head, on your heart, just type it out, and then ask AI to generate it to make sense for you. You can make it more friendly. You can make it more firm. You can make it in adherence to Minnesota court statutes. I'm telling you, it's not foolproof. I don't want to offer that false claim, but it will help you to start organizing your thoughts and asking you what are the questions, taking your thoughts and putting them in an organized format that looks and sounds like, you know, something that can guide you, at least get you started.
And
you could generate what are the, you could, if you, and here's the easier thing to do is you can take pictures of that stuff and you can upload it, and then AI will summarize what's in the pictures, all the documents that you have, and it, you can ask it at prompt, you can ask it to say summarize the top key concerns or the top key safety issues that you see in this, and then you have it there. So,
well, that is hard because, I mean, if you have an attorney, right, they're paid to fight, because they get paid by the hour, right? So if you can find collaborative divorce, and sometimes you can't. I mean, I know all this. Like, I'm just saying, like, that's so hard. And on our side of the family, my ex-husband's wife was very court-focused. And on my side, my ex and I worked together fabulously. So we've done both. And, you know, and it's really stressful. The other thing is, there is, I don't know if you use any sort of software, but there's a new one out called Family Core, the Family Core, and it helps you do shared calendars, some communication, but you also can upload legal documents, so it's always with you. And I think it's like $4 a month kind of thing. But it was built for this because that family, who we all met through the blended family world, but they were in court all the time because he had a very combative ex-wife, and they were in court all the days, like truly all the days. And so they just needed a way to organize their lives and their legal documents for when she randomly would serve something. So the Family Core is that software that would help organize some of that too. But I agree. I use chat for a lot of things, and I just say, speak to me as, or what do I not want to miss in the Minnesota statute of blah, 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 or, you know, or think like an attorney, a family law attorney, think like a family law attorney and blah, blah, you know, like if you give it sort of the prompt of what you want it to be, it kind of gives it the framework. And then it'll ask questions. Do you want me to be more firm? Do you want me to be more friendly? Do you want me to shorten this up? Do you want it for a slide? I mean, like.
Yeah, the only caution with ChatGPT and AI is just make sure you're not uploading any confidential or personally identifying information, because that is the public domain unless you are paying a ChatGPT fee, like that app you talked about that's $4 a month. Like, that's just, be cautious of that.
Yep. What other questions? You got parent coach up here. Like, nobody's got any issues with toddlers. I mean, I wish I had Ange in my back pocket when I was raising kids. Go for it.
I mean, I think if your children are saying, I do not want to go to dad's house, and here are the reasons why, supporting them to say, you know, I'm really sorry that those things are going on at your dad's house, and they've never gone. Okay, so. So, right. Right. So when you validate their you have to validate their experience, right? It's important to say, yes, you experienced those things. Yes, those were unhealthy things. And even when you say abuse, it's better to describe the behavior specifically that they experienced rather than to say he was abusive, right? So he locked me in a room for whatever length of time and I couldn't go to the bathroom, so whatever. Or, you know, he kept flicking me in the head and I kept saying, no, Dad, stop. And he wouldn't stop and he was calling me names. Like, that's abuse. It is, that is not okay. And I'm sorry that you experienced that. And I'm sorry that as a parent, I wasn't able to protect you from that. It's okay. Yeah.
I'll just add a piece that as you encourage them and they're growing into young adults, that eventually, I mean, I always talk to my families about, I don't know what the outcome of their circumstances is going to be, but my goal is to help you and your child have the healthiest relationship possible. And sometimes that means you have no relationship because that's the healthiest right now, right? And you can keep the door open that when your child understands what a healthy relationship looks like and they reach out at their time, when whatever that looks like in the future, it's really a great opportunity to talk about what a healthy relationship is and how they can learn from that experience in their own relationships moving forward. And there absolutely, and there doesn't have to be a blame, right? Because you're absolutely, you're trying to play this neutral person because you don't want to taint them and alienate them on purpose because he's already done that. Absolutely. So that's the language that I use is that, you know, I want to encourage you to have the healthiest relationship possible with your dad when you are ready. And that can look like that's their ownership of that then. Do you feel comfortable with that? Do you feel safe with that? Do you feel like that's healthy for you? And when they can say yes to those conversations and those questions, then they know that they're ready to move into that at some point.
So if I could just, I just wanted to give an encouraging word that
I was going to say, it also would be super helpful if they see like a neutral third party for them to get into some counseling. Okay, great. Because, it's not just your job. Like, there are professionals that can help and that can help them see, you know, discern right from wrong. Sometimes it's hard because if you cross that line into saying something that sounds like you're being critical of their dad, they could flip and be like, but that's my dad. I can't believe you're saying that about my dad. Like, they shift into this protector, even though he's been abusive and all it will flip on you. And then you'll be like, oh, I was just saying the truth, but it ends up kind of coming back on you. So that's just tricky. So that's where it can be more helpful to have someone neutral. So I'm glad to hear they're both in counseling.
Just the last encouragement that I would offer is that, and again, this was through the Call to Peace training, but the fact that, you know, children who've, you know, your kids and other kids that have been through just trauma in their childhood or really difficult circumstances, they can heal from that, right? God heals, and for you being a healthy parent to them, they can heal from that. They don't have to live with that quote-unquote damage the rest of their lives. So that's incredibly, I hope that's encouraging to you. Yeah.
Yep. I'm like, oh.
I mean, I think it's really tricky. I mean, are you saying you think he's been exposed to pornography? He also has been exposed to pornography? Because that is definitely an issue, and I don't know if there's any way to document that, again, in this you know, binder of sorts, if you will. Right. Yeah, and I don't know that you, it may need to be another male relative, if you have a brother or your dad, like, and I don't want to sound glib, but you can't, yeah, a youth, like,
go ahead.
Like you, I mean, it's tricky. You,
I know.
You can't physically stop them from doing it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's not like he's doing it out in the open. So, I mean, that's the hard
part. And you don't
want to
shame them.
I'm not trying to say, yeah, you don't want to shame them because that's.
Yeah, those
are
the.
Well, okay, so this comes up often in some of my work. Really what I would encourage you to do is explore what your values are as a family, right? Because I can't tell you how to handle that. And really no one can, because your values are true to you, and those are the values you're trying to establish as a foundation for growing your children, right? So when you think about what those values are and you have conversations like this or any other tough topic with your children, is you always go back to those values. This is the core foundation of what we stand for as a family. This is our true north. So any decision that you make with your children and about your children should always rely on those values. And that kind of language, you know, like we are respectful to ourselves and our bodies and others. We are kind. We are whatever those end up being. That's the language you start to establish in your home. And you start every decision the kids make, right? You're going out with your friends. Remember to respect yourself, your body, and your friends, right? Or whatever that is, you use that language because it starts to be, you start to plant the seed for who they are and who they can be when they turn 18 and leave your home. So that those are, maybe that conversation doesn't have to be about masturbation, but it can be about who you are as a person and what we stand for as a family, and what does that mean for the decisions that we make.
All right. No. I mean, I always go to the Rolodex in my head, and we do a lot of work with couples. But there is an organization out of Minneapolis called Faithful and True, and it is recovery for couples who have sex addiction, porn, like things that have impacted their marriage. All that to say is they may have resources as well. Faithful and True, it's a Christian-based recovery program for sex addiction. They may have sort of like how to have these conversations with, or what things you should think about it. I like Angie's, like, you know, let's bump up against who we are and, you know, those sorts of things. But they might have, for the more deep dive and resources, that they might be able to answer some more of those questions because they see it on the other end, right? All right. So I think we're. Well, I am just going to pray us out, and then I think lunch is next, and then we'll be back in here. Hopefully whoever wants to come back, we can answer more questions. Just kidding. Dear Lord, I just thank you for this opportunity to meet these amazing moms, Lord, and just to truly just impart some wisdom, some grace, and just love. I hope that all of them walk out of here, not just seen, but feeling ignited and supported in their work. Again, not just supported, but sent. God, we know that you're not done writing their story and that you're just getting started. Lord, I just pray over the rest of this event for these moms, that they go home feeling rested and refreshed and supported and seen. Lord, we thank you for loving us. I pray all these things in your Son's holy and precious name. Amen.